From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture. While U.S. dairy industry leaders traveled to Mexico recently to ensure Mexico that U.S. dairymen value the trade partnership between the two nations. Mexico's the top U.S. dairy exporter, accounting for nearly 25% of all U.S. dairy exports. National Milk Producers Federation spokesperson Chris Gainland says the dairy leaders want to keep Mexico a top customer of U.S. dairy products.
This was the CEO of the National Milk Producers, Jim Mulhern. He was joined by his counterparts at the U.S. Dairy Export Council and the International Dairy Foods Association. And they went together just basically to deliver the message to everyone in Mexico's dairy industry, as well as to people who work in the Mexican government, that we value the partnership that we have with Mexico, and we don't want to see that jeopardized. So there's a lot of talk right now about renegotiating NAFTA and reassessing the terms of the trade between the countries. And the one thing that we don't want to get tossed out with any major changes is that important relationship we have with U.S. dairy exports and Mexican consumers.
Now, if renegotiations of the North America Free Trade Agreement were to change the trade landscape for U.S. dairy, Gainland says there's competing nations eager to supply Mexico.
The U.S. is not the only dairy exporter around the world. We have very strong competition from New Zealand, which by volume is the number one exporter in terms of their overall milk production. And then the European Union is also a major exporter. And they would certainly love to be able to have greater access to Mexico and the rest of Latin America. Because of NAFTA, U.S. dairy exports to Mexico don't have to pay tariffs. Exports from other countries do. But if that relationship changes, then that means that we might be losing markets that we fought very hard in the 20 years since NAFTA was passed. We fought very hard to create and keep those markets, and we don't want to see that jeopardized.
National Milk Producer Federation spokesperson Chris Gainland. Well, we're going to take a break here. Well, and I realize we've got a little ways to go before we take that break. But when we come back, it's been a busy week in Washington. Guess what? The House of Representatives, they're going to try to do a health care bill. Well, they're going to get, well, one way or the other, that'll get done today. Also, when we come back, Sonny Perdue, he could be our next ag secretary. As a matter of fact, he could be headed for Senate confirmation. The only problem is we don't know exactly when. As a matter of fact, it was real short-lived yesterday as he was talked to by the Senate Ag Committee. We'll discuss that when we come back. And are we going to have Neil Gorsuch? Well, we'll talk about that as well. That's all coming your way. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture during National Ag Week, which actually ends tomorrow. So what are we going to talk about? Yes, former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue appears headed for Senate confirmation as the next U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. Though the big question is when? A genial and reassuring Perdue gave ag senators of both parties just about all the answers they wanted to hear on trade, renewable fuels, ag research, rural development, conservation, dairy, deregulation, and help crafting a new farm bill. Now, the former Georgia governor, farmer, veterinarian, and agribusiness operator got a friendly reception from Republicans and Democrats, anxious to see a secretary at the Department of Agriculture. Perdue, once a Democrat, vowed bipartisan cooperation. Now, Democrats' only real complaint was directed not at him, but at President Trump's proposed USDA budget cuts. But with Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch ahead of him and a promised Democratic filibuster of Gorsuch, the timing of Perdue's Senate confirmation is in question. Senate Ag Chair Pat Roberts on committee action.
And we will move as quickly as possible to consider your nomination. As you know, we will not be voting on your nomination today, but we will work to schedule a business meeting ASAP for a committee vote.
Ag senators sought Perdue's assurances he'd be a tireless fighter in the administration for producers. And he gave them just that, citing his long experience in agriculture.
So I've been in agribusiness since 1977, the founder and operator of three agribusiness and transportation firms serving farmers across the southeastern United States. Farming and farmers have been my life ever since. I've lived and breathed the exhilaration of a great crop and the despair and devastation of a drought. I've learned by experience what my father told me as a child: if you take care of the land, it will take care of you.
Purdue vowed to protect the land, food safety, farmers, consumers, and taxpayers. But top Democrat Debbie Stabenow had this on the president's USDA budget.
When we look at a 21% cut in the budget, it's extremely concerning to me and to so many of us that care about small towns. And in fact, I grew up in one of those small towns in northern Michigan.
Purdue agreed to do all he could to meet ag's needs, but in the confines of a final budget.
I flippantly say sometimes I grew a $20 billion budget in Georgia to $16 billion during that 2003 to 2011 period of time.
And not because he wanted to, but because he had to, more with less. Purdue's two-and-a-half-hour hearing ended on an up note. Chairman Roberts cited letters of support for Purdue, including one from nearly 700 farm and food groups and one from six former secretaries of agriculture who served under presidents of both parties. Well, also, when we're talking about what's going on in Washington, D.C., health care, big on the list today, as the House Ag Committee, well, I shouldn't say the House Ag Committee, the House of Representatives is going to be voting on that health care bill today. They need 216 votes to get it passed, and I guess we'll find out more about that when it happens this afternoon. Also, Democrat Joe Manchin cautions against a Gorsuch filibuster. He says what comes around actually goes around. He said yesterday, and he would not join a Democratic filibuster of President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Neil Gorsuch, arguing that the integrity of the Senate needs to be preserved. Manchin, a conservative Democrat in key votes, stated the Senate decorum needs to be preserved and that it started to fall apart in 2013 when then-Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid instituted the so-called nuclear option. That's not what the Founding Fathers decided for this body. This body's a very unique body, a very deliberate body, supposed to be the teapot cooling the tea off. That according to Manchin. So we'll find out if Gorsuch gets a filibuster from the Democrats. Well, we're going to take another break here. And when we come back, the agriculture community in Texas, they're coming together to help ranchers recover after devastating wildfires. We'll talk about that right after this. From the Meridian Manufacturing Studios, you're listening to Inside Agriculture on 910 Classic Country, KCJB in Minot, Farm News in Real Country, Thunder 106.1, Lisbon and Fargo, and Ag News 890, also Lisbon and Fargo, North Dakota. Well, before we took that last break, said we're going to come back and talk about the wildfires, not only in Texas, but Kansas and Oklahoma as well. While recent wildfires across Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado, and Kansas have left ranchers and farmers assessing damage and coming together as a community to rebuild. Cattle, fences, lives, and homes were all lost in the fires. Texas Farm Bureau's Gene Hall described the fires that swept through Texas a few weeks ago as a perfect storm.
We had rain earlier in the year that produced a lot of lush growth in the eastern part of the panhandle. And then the winds came back, dried all that out, and it only took one spark, we think, from a transformer to destroy more than 400,000 acres of grassland. This also took the lives of five people, caused about $21 million in damage and approximately 3,000 to 5,000 head of livestock.
He says relief efforts started before the fires were actually put out.
As far as we know right now, the hay and feed needs have been met. The Texas Farm Bureau is focusing right now on using our foundation to solicit tax-deductible donations that can be used for other things. These other things include the building of fences, which thousands of miles of fences were lost in the panhandle to these fires.
He says farmers and ranchers across the country have come together to support the ranching community in Texas.
Agriculture in Texas and elsewhere across the nation is kind of a community. It's a bond that we share with people that we may not even know. Years ago, back in the history of farming in this country, people would get together to build a barn if a barn was lost. And it's kind of that same spirit that we're getting together to do something that needs to be done. Farmers and ranchers just kind of feel compelled to help in some way.
Visit the Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado, and Kansas Farm Bureau websites for information how to help affected farmers and ranchers rebuild after the wildfires. We'll take another break, and when we come back, we're actually going to be talking about what's going on in South Dakota. We'll do that next.
The effect agriculture has on the state's economy is measured in a variety of ways. South Dakota Secretary of Revenue Andy Gerlach says taxes are, of course, one way to quantify the impact.
That I think it's important to know the role that it plays in South Dakota, and I will tell you that it is huge. You know, the ag economy that we have in South Dakota is so important. I think it's recognized not only by the Department of Revenue, but when you look at legislative leaders, our congressional delegation, it's really important that we have a strong ag economy. Some of the things that we look at are how healthy is the ag sector in terms of revenue that we can actually spend in South Dakota. Farm income plays a big role in that. When you have strong commodity prices, strong cattle prices, obviously your farm income is good. In the Department of Revenue, we see that on a tangible basis through sales tax collections that come in, contractors' excise tax collections that come in. A lot of the revenues that we receive then from the ag economy come through farm equipment purchases. So if your farm income is good, you're more likely to go out and buy new equipment, tractors, things like that. I know the retail sector, not only in communities across South Dakota, but even in our bigger communities in Sioux Falls and Rapid City, benefit from a strong ag economy. I think you'll even talk to some of the folks in Deadwood, and their numbers both in hotel rooms and gaming are a little down, and they will tell you that some of that is even dependent on ag. So if you have the income from the ag economy, and it's good and strong, and farmers are comfortable with that, they're likely to spend more money. The other thing, too, we really saw from about 2010 to 2015, again, when we had good commodity prices, is that people were building more grain bins. And you drive across South Dakota any direction, and you saw new grain bins, new machine sheds, things like that. The direct result that we receive from that is those construction projects then are part of the contractor's excise tax. So it's not only in the retail sector, but the contractor's excise tax, that when the ag economy is good, obviously revenues are better. And then from the state of South Dakota, it allows us to have a strong budget as well. So I will tell you that the ag economy is still the number one economy driver in business in South Dakota, and we see it in a lot of different ways.
So you definitely notice as the ag economy rises and falls, several areas of the state economy move with it.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, this past year and during this past legislative session, we struggled with our budget, and all you had to do was follow it and see that the numbers were flat or down a little bit. This really came to light with us in the past year and a half when we saw some of our sales tax collections start to go down or flatten out, and it's really two things that are driving that. I think it's the ag economy, and then I think more people are purchasing things online, to which right now we can't legally tax all of those. So if someone were to ask why are sales collections down, why are state revenues down, those are the two things that I point to.
Get more information about the programs and services the South Dakota Department of Revenue offers by calling 605-773-3311 or visit their website, dor.sd.gov. Reporting in South Dakota, I'm Jody Heemstra.
And there you have it, a look at what's going on inside agriculture on this Friday. And, of course, this is National Ag Week, and we invite you all to go out and thank a farmer for everything that they do for our nation. And, of course, not only during National Ag Week, but do it every day of the week Whenever you see a farmer and his wife, or you see a farm lady and her husband, thank them for what they do. That's Inside Agriculture. I'm Farm Director Terry Loomis.